You know, when you sit quietly, you know, anything goes to one extent or another. When there's active dialogue, you kind of get to see what holds water and what doesn't. And there's actually much, much less that holds water once you start digging in. And I find that Jeff will enthusiastically explore any and all avenues that may not have the foundation we think it does. You know, certain belief systems, ways of looking and seeing. And then what I'm left with is, oh, okay, now what? I would call that a kind of a more of an open space of going from, well, of course I know that, to, oh,
you didn't know that.
I know very little.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. So that's just one little piece. That's, you know, I say it's wonderfully complementary to the practice that I've been doing for a long time. So the how, if you look at it in a more nuanced manner, the how requires self, time, effort, and let's say applied agency. The moment you pick up the smallest breadcrumb of how, you're already toast, because you're reaching back into those qualities of consciousness that are responsible for the anxiety and the apprehension to begin with. So this is a subtle, it's sometimes humorous, sometimes confrontational, discontinuity of the habits of mind that reinforce the imagination of one's etheric identity. There is no how, and yet we meet four times a week. At least I show up, right? There's no destination, but we meet four times a week. Nothing really ever happens to anybody, and still we meet quite frequently. Now, the mind that imagines herself, himself, oneself to have existed prior to now can't process that simply hanging out and having a kind of a curious conversation, good evening, could or would actually bear fruit, because the mind insists on material to process. It insists on reference. It insists on like and dislike, discernment, discrimination, signs of, you know, symptoms or symptom abatement.
Right. Like when you just said there's no how, there's no this, I'm thinking, well, my mind is thinking.
Yeah.
I can't categorize anything. You know, this is.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And it's hard.
It's quite.
Because I keep saying to myself,
yes,
well,
yes.
How do you do it?
There
how
you
do
go.
It?
So there, thank you. That's why we meet as frequently as we do for as long as we have. Because that habit, which is not yours.
Right.
That's just, I mean, you nor does anybody else place a tremendous emphasis on following a mind that goes, well, wait, well, how? But what? I mean, it just, right?
Yeah.
It just appears as it appears.
It's like looking for structure.
Yes.
Constantly.
So this reality, the one where you could say apprehension and anxiety and depression is resolved, is the reality that is not processing imaginary material. And so here it is. So our dance is to learn how to trust a kind of non-specific, you could say, a nonsensical approach to learning how to trust the, the bliss field of present experience as you simply withdraw, again, not willfully, not effortfully, not through vows. You simply withdraw from the maniacal nature of imagination and learn what it feels like with great confidence, palpable, felt, you discover the nourishment of what this already is. That's how it works. Now, for some people, you know, it's threatening. Because if we're not relying on personal story or cosmology, rules, authority, consequences, then...
I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know.
That's right.
There's donuts.
Yeah. It's chocolate.
Chocolate, peanut butter cups. Donuts are in my experience.
Now, it's very strange, you know, considering the way that we humans, you know, have been conditioned and then how we engage each other habitually. I mean, how do I hang out with someone present, available, without, you could say, playing story ping pong? Is the effervescent nature of present experience sufficient? Is it nourishing? Is it playful? Does it speak in, you could say, textural innuendo rather than in elaborate projection? So your present experience, just before, let's say, you pick up a breadcrumb of what anything is about, you are, as are we all, rich with sensation, saturated with availability, sensitivity, unknowing. And that's that. Hanging out in yourself, not your demonstrative, very charming self, but hanging out just here. I don't have anything to prove. I'm not asking anyone else to prove anything. No one has to be clever, smart, entitled, worthwhile. And no one has to relieve themselves of any suffering. Here, just here, no one has to relieve themselves of any suffering. And that's true. But we so easily drift from the simplicity of the irrefutability of my own presence into imagination. I need 1,000 therapists. At least start with 1,000 and then depending how good they are, and then add from there. So this is a salon where you are, anyone is invited to be nobody special. And you can discover, sometimes joyfully, sometimes threateningly, and that's not my doing. It's just how one's consciousness starts to roll with a profound shift in orientation, a profound retrofitting. We're so accustomed to going to mind as the arbiter of what's happening now, what has happened in the past, what will happen in the future, and then what I have to do about all that. And all of that is total hallucination. But we've become so habituated to this hallucination. And we reinforce in, you know, social relations, intimate relations, familial relations, business relations. We reinforce that mania because we're taught to. And anyone that would start to slip out of that is a little strange. You know, either not to be trusted, or which is the most common reaction. If you start, let's just say, hanging out with people that know you, And you are relaxed, ambient, and present. And that's that. You're alive, but you're not processing anything. Will close friends or associates or casual friends or associates think you're like doing great? Or will they be perhaps intimidated by you or misunderstand your intentions or where you're going with things? So, you know, it's like this is an elevator ride where everyone kind of, you know, doesn't really socialize all that much and just kind of waits for their floor to show up, right?
Try not to fart.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Uh-huh. Yeah, or, you
I'm
know.
I'm the most mature one in this
room. Right.
Berate your children on your cell phone, yeah. Yeah, this is an elevator ride where it's, yeah, it's okay. That's it. When folks get together in a meditation hall, and maybe you've been in one or several, in a sense, you could say the agreement in the meditation hall is everyone sit down and shut the fuck up for however long we agree to do this, and we hope you're okay. And we might present, you know, instruction or cosmology, or if it's a Vipassana retreat or a Goenka retreat or a this or a that, you know, there's a news feed, right, to orient to. And that's how that operates. Well, here, we're not meditating, though you can. And there's no news feed. That's intimacy. We're not sharing anything about our past lives or our silent regrets, shames, or aspirations. But, oh my God, just being ordinary with not the slightest need to impress. That's intimacy. That's what this is. That intimacy is, will be, the undoing of the depression and the anxiety and the mania of going habitually to imagination to define yourself, to place yourself in a context. See, reality, what I mean by that is anybody's guess. Because if I start yabbering, or if any certain one starts yabbering about reality, it's instant cosmology. It's a news feed. Like, let's leave it alone. Here it is. This is it.
Right.
Don't ask me what it is. I don't know. But if you listen to it, there's no demand. There's no validation. It's unadorned. So are you. Unadorned. Resting in that, learning how to rest in that, relieves us of the habit of exaggerated and afflicted association. And it gets weirder and stranger than merely being an ameliorative, right? And I mean, in the early stages of someone taking up anything spiritual, it's like, I'm fucked. I could use a hand. So you could say the early motivating factors, which are noble, of course, and sincere, of course, are, if I don't get a break from myself somehow, something's going to fucking snap. Which is the most awesome of motivators, and why not? As this conversation matures, through familiarity, dare I say through repetition, though that's no special invitation or insistence that you ever join us again. So it's in that way, it's quite egalitarian and quite voluntary. There's no dues. There's no magical passwords. There's no points. There's no board of directors. There's no hierarchy. There's no cosmology. It's just the dignity of strangers and then sometimes friends just fucking chilling, loitering about. And it's has a kick. Down the road a piece, as the principal motivators, which are ameliorative in nature, you could say make a little traction. Maybe you notice, oh, I'm exaggerating a little less, or I've learned how to take Eckhart Tolle's advice, and I understand what the power of now implies. It's neither power, nor is it now, because those are ideas. Those are fetishes of mind. Here's this. If you want to call it now, that's cool, but you'll know it never stays now. It's always now, but it never remains now, because there is no now. There's just the streaming nature of experience, always from moment to moment, completely novel. You never get frozen in a now. It doesn't stand still.
I guess I look at now differently.
When? When is now?
Right now.
And now?
Now it's right now.
And?
It just keeps going.
Oh, that's what my point.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's no now that you can actually occupy as a destination or a place because its nature is streaming.
Right.
It's streaming novelty. And so we refer to now, what we're saying is, because it doesn't quit. So what's, I would say, fun to dismantle is the notion of the power of now, as poetic as it might sound in one respect, is absolutely misleading. There's neither power, because one needs none. And there's no now. Because there's just streaming novelty. And if you're not assigning or insisting upon spatial, temporal, attitudinal, spiritual, psychological, emotional, sensual orientation, what the fuck is it? There's your freedom. Here, just this. Free from the habits of insisting upon and asserting orientation. You discover unadorned novelty. And some might refer to that, you know, as it, let's say, gets under your skin a little bit. Realization, awakening. It's not important. None of those things are important because anything that's referred to as realization or awakening or peak spiritual experiences, they don't mean anything. They have no value, except perhaps to draw attention to oneself and bilk other people of their attention and money. So this is egalitarian. No one has an advantage here. No one's prior spiritual experience amounts to doodly-doo. Because there's only this, streaming novelty, unadorned. Who could have an advantage? What claim could be made about it? None. This is how we do it, you see?
Mm-hmm.
The habits of mind that insist on orientation or agreement or pride of ownership, whether spiritual or otherwise, just relaxes of its own nature as one gives attention to the curious texture of streaming novelty without taking a position. You've arrived. And with attention being present, and unadorned, and not hell-bent on processing anything that's ever happened to you, or trying to outwit what the future may bring. Here. Where's the anxiety? Where's the depression? They're only referential. this is, you know, no one's doing. This is what reality might be if we pay it a certain quality of attention. If we follow the trajectory of conformist reality, whether science, physics, anthropology, sociology, a thousand different religions, cults of many kinds, politicians, the nation state, the corporatocracy, dot, 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 we get completely lost in a myth field of implication, which, in these days at least, can engender quite a wheelbarrow full of anxiety, apprehension, depression.
So it should. If you're orienting to that stuff and you're not anxious or depressed, I think you have bigger issues.
You have bigger issues, yeah. You're a sociopath. If you're not fucked up, you're a sociopath. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You see, the holding out, the withholding that we suffer from, you could say is characterized by what's going to happen to me, or people I love, or pets I love, or my belongings, or my investments, right? My appearance, my health, a thousand things, right, are at risk. So, to the extent that we are self-admiring of our so-called belongings, we're in trouble because we're vulnerable. If we attempt to ameliorate that vulnerability, sometimes we're successful, sometimes not so much. I mean, maybe someone goes to church to deal with the vulnerability of living. Someone goes into a relationship that finds a generous partner to ameliorate vulnerability. One commits themselves to their career path and, you know, earnings,
constant grooming.
Grooming.
Grooming in order to find the person who's going to get.
Grooming in order grooming. To find, yeah, you know, and
groom,
then
groom, groom,
then
groom.
The use of,
it's
you know, use of substances, right, or whatever, shopping. You know how many kinds of curious addictions there are in the marketplace, and then we could even include our commitment to recovery as part of that, because the addiction thing has tipped us a little bit too far, and we want some relief from our own compulsivity. So now we have our recovery community as part of our right picture and imagination of self. So we're, you know, looking for tribal affiliation, right? Mm-hmm. And security seeking unrelentingly. And we get trapped in the imagination of our imagination.
Seems like me, or everyone actually, I don't understand why the mind is built like that. You know?
It's fucked up.
Yep.
And why, but why would that be? Why would that be created to do such damage? You know, when everything else is perfect, it functions, it keeps us going. And then yet you have that mind that's screwing you up every step of the way. Interesting.
Well, you could say no one knows why anything. You know, is our conversation this evening and the pleasure of our meeting each other just the downstream fruits of the Big Bang, or the Great Turtle, or you know, the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, or Hashem, or, you know, Islam, or Buddha, or Krishna, and Ram, and Sita, and Ganesh, and on and on and on and on. This is a causal. This is a causal.
That's also arbitrary. I mean, you could also say there's poetry and music and lyrics and all those things to some extent. You can use mind to create something. I mean, it's all, not that it's either way is better or worse, but just kind of.
It's a package deal.
Yeah.
You know, well, what do they say, right? God it's gives you lemons.
All-inclusive package deal.
Make lemonade.
I see the irritation increasing with the level of sense of self. What?
Go ahead, sense of self.
The stronger I build myself up as a person that's going from here to somewhere better, collecting again stories and ideas and thoughts and experiences, and then recounting them and trying to problem solve the parts that I don't like. I'm already off the rails in a sense. And culturally, not only is the self reinforced, particularly in the West, particularly in the United States, heroes are exalted and elevated. What child doesn't want to be the superhero, right? So we're doing superhero and creating great levels of irritation on the backside of it, by actually investing, saying there's some truth and I'm screwed up and I need to do something to not be, versus what is this thing that evaluates an I that actually thinks it's grounded in knowing what that is and how it even comes to be or where it should be going. And that's where I think, even as I sit quietly most of the time, it derails the cleverness of wanting to really deeply understand and know things, which leads to the same cycle of, you know, you reach a place where it's like, oh, now I realize I know even less. And then there's, you know, there's some relief of that self that just keeps coming back.
When one goes to the, you know, curious questions of why and how, where and what for, right? You immediately enter again a referential field of something meaning something, having to be the consequence of somebody's doing, since I can't find the jerk that's responsible for my being so fucked up, I create God.
I know. I was like, you know, like my dog was smelling something today, like trying to check, is that edible? You know, because like, that's what he does. He walks around like lotion. Is that edible? It smells like it could be, you know, I'm like, no, that's not edible. And I was like, if that were me, I would look at me and be like, who the fuck decides what's edible or not edible around here? Like, let me try it, you know? What I don't know. Like, it's a funny.
It's only one way to find out.
That's like what we do, you know? Well, who the fuck decides what's edible or not edible around here?
No, here's a shockwave of incredulity, disbelief. No one knows what this is. If we respond to that gift by investing in knowledge and reference, causality, and creation, we simply reinforce superstition and myth. The whole of human culture, from as far back as you can find it, refers to and relies upon, whether it's cuneiform or cave painting or exquisite mathematics or Bibles of one kind or another, or manifestos of another kind or another, are just a field of referential myth. That includes the Ramayana and the Ashtavakra Gita and the Pali Canon and anything you can find.
I'm trying to figure out how one communicates without all those references and
sparingly, humorously, self-effacingly. You don't need.
And if you ask someone a question, you're trying to figure something out, right?
Well, when you're, you know, if you're saying, where can I find the apple cider vinegar? then you might find the apple cider vinegar, you know, if you're in the grocery store, right? So the practicality of searching out food and entertainment and getting your job done and going out on a date and liking or disliking people is all part of the referential field. And that operates the way it always has operated. You could say quite impersonally, quite spontaneously. You use the tool of the referential field to participate in the structures of the species, of the civilization. Why not? How else are you going to get into the museum? So we're speaking not antithetically to that, but complementarily to that is, I don't know anything at all, and I can't tell you how happy I am. That's the primary nature. The functioning nature with the tools and the language of the civilization are secondary to your primary nature. You could say because, if there's a because, and there needn't be, or let's say it's really hard to pin any because on anything, because there is nothing than this here. You see, it's pure emptiness. It's unadorned, blissful in its own way, nourishing emptiness. That's its nature. And then it's full instantaneously with no hesitation with everything that can be found. And you're like, figure that shit out.
So on a normal night.
Normal night, yeah. Well. Yes. Something other than this happens.
Okay, you know, okay. The word normal doesn't.
All right, not normal. Not take away normal. On any give or take night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you normally do?
This exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, this is.
Sometimes there's snacks, more snacks than those, but those are really good. But this usually is, there's a wide variety of snacks.
That's it. This is it. Yeah. This is what we do.
Different flavors depending on.
Who's in
who shows up? But
who shows up? The mood, the weather,
and it gets
the snacks, gets the really environment,
sparky and sparkly. If somebody comes and they have a really strong sense of one thing or another, and they assert that, and it becomes an interesting, I guess, an interesting place to work from. How would you describe it?
If any one of us were to be gradually and noticeably relieved of the habits of anxiety, the habits of depression, the habits of apprehension and projection, well, what the fuck would we do? Right?
Right.
It's here.
Here we are.
Store.
This is it. Yeah. Really.
Yeah, it's the only place I can come
true.
Where
it nobody, is. It's fucking true.
Nobody's going to fix you.
That's right.
Not going to want to fix you.
That's what we do. It looks different. The conversations, whatever the conversation is, you know, we gossip about people that aren't here. We make fun of spiritual teachers and shit like that because it's a pastime. We have snacks, you know, sometimes, you know, like in the summertime, I have fires at my place. So we all sit around a fire and drink wine and just hang the fuck out. Sometimes, you know, and as you could say, one's call it consciousness, the momentum, right? The momentum of referential consciousness is, it has legs. It's not, it doesn't go down easily most often. And so waves occur in that sometimes you're like, I didn't know I could be this chill. I didn't do anything to get this chill. I mean, it's like that effortless. Like, holy shit. I'm not even meditating and I'm high as a kite. And sometimes it's some gnarly shit will come in because you could say like a snake molts its skin. We're playing around and not casually. mind you. This can appear to be very casual, and in many respects, it's purely casual. In other respects, be warned. Elements in one's psyche that is very accommodating to apprehension and depression and anxiety and micromanagement will not necessarily go down without a fight.
No,
yeah. Okay. So by simply creating and soliciting, encouraging, cultivating a space of nobody special, we can be nourished by that with having no vector, because reality is vectorless. So we may as well join in along the way, because we are made of so many ingrained tension and association patterns. The tapestry, right? This tapestry starts to relax. Well, those patterns will necessarily find their way metaphorically up and out. So, you know, there can be some, just like in even regular life without fucking around with this stuff,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this kind of conversation, you could say, call it a conscious, call it a deliberate return to the ease of loitering, can trigger and will sometimes elicit, you know, a little bit of a healing crisis. But life does anyway. Yeah, so it's not special in that regard. But this is a little bit confrontational, you know, because you're really stamping into, let's just say, transhuman intelligence, transhuman sensitivity. That's not orienting habitually. That's not right, processing. Right. That's it's all egomaniacal.
Right.
Isness will kick your ass. You'll find your home in isness if it's your predilection and good fortune for that to occur, and it will kick your ass along the way. Oftentimes, you know, out of, dare I say, compassion. I mean, I'm as good a hypnotist as any of us are, right? And if you have a motivation to, you know, attract or entice or communicate with someone, you can lay that down. So we're all capable of stringing people along if we want to, if we're inspired to, if we're compelled to. So I don't do that. In this circle, I have no more or less than anybody else, a keen sense of, you know, call it vibratory availability, right? So if people walk in here and that you could just, there's a lot of agenda, there's a lot of background, there's a lot of, you know, let's just say understandably defended, right, patina around them, I give them all the evidence they need to get out of here and never return. Because it's clear that this is going to get under their skin and not going to work out. So the compassionate thing to do is give them all the material they need to discount this, me, and walk out never to return. And I'm like, whew. Sometimes someone shows up where it's like, oh, you might actually be interested in this. You might be at the stage of your journey that we can lay down some pretty weird tracks, and you're like, cool. This yogic approach, which is, you know, perennial and global, the Gnostic approach, is everywhere. It's underneath the skin of the demonstrative aspects of the religion, of the demonstrative aspects of the Buddhism, of the yoga class, of the this, of the that. It's, you know, where the rubber meets the road. So we're not special in any regard, because you can find salons like this, if you're lucky, if you're, you know, tuned to it, all over the place. But it's not for public consumption. not because it's special, but because it's intimate. And an invitation to that quality of intimacy has everything to do with you. The three of us have been doing this for quite some time. But I think it would be difficult, but I'm not going to speak for anybody, why they're here again. You know, why do this once? Why do it twice?
I can tell you why. If I'm a record with a needle in it,
yeah,
I like that needle popping out of the groove. And this pops me out of the groove, in a sense. Mm-hmm. I'm fish born. Because I'm tired of my groove, actually. You know, I've been working it for a while, and it's...
I'm so groovy, I stopped being groovy.
It's nice to have that thing just go...
Yeah, right.
And then you get that little click, click. And it's less busy. Yeah. I'm not searching for something like I might often do. I'm not trying to figure something out. And even if I am, it's just... pops out of the groove here.
This is our contemporary approach to, let's just say, the tribal fire. In communities or cultures that were not overwhelmed by creature comforts and the stresses of the so-called modern life. The communities would gather, you know, frequently, ritually, whether to share tobacco or stories or the fire or song or drumming, and simply be nourished under the stars by each other's company and find, you know, wholeness there, find transcendence there, find visions and gifts from the animals, from the elders, from the plants. So there was a dialogue, right, mm-hmm. of the throbbing beauty of life celebrated every day. And in our culture, hard to find.
If at all.
If at all. So this thing that we do is aboriginal. It's just a tribal warmth. And instead of making it about, you know, story and recovery and suffering and right, all the stuff that we're all quite capable of diving into, we just put that over here and loiter without it. And we're nourished by our own experience and the company of others that are, you could say, relaxing and willing to be undefended, authentic, and with nothing to prove.
And when there is something to prove, they chuckle at you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if one is feeling a strong, impulse of something right. to prove, the stage is yours. You know, prove away.
Or
we're like, it's a talent show.
Dealing with some level of psychological pain, I might get goofy, like puns and looking for the silly edge, you know, and something. Yeah. And that can be okay sometimes, but at others, it's, I don't know what you call it.
There's a lot.
In the groove.
There's a lot to confront in a constructive way as we disarm ourselves and get accustomed to being disarmed without having one's personality to defend or promote. This is nourishing of its own accord. And to discover that is radical. Because our tendencies to pursue nourishment, well, tend to be, right, extroverted. And sensuality based, or psychiatrically or emotionally based, but in some respect, fail to really deliver an ease of being that no longer suffers from some form of codependency. So what if your, you know, own soul, like right about here and right about now, was that short a journey for you to take to be nourished without dependency on anyone or anything external to you? That's fucked up. If there were a goal of meditation, of therapy, of recovery, of everything and anything under the sun, I would suggest it would be that. That one is capable of discovering a quality of novelty, sovereignty, that relies on nothing and nobody else for its own nourishment. And here we are. This is it. Get used to it. And that's what we do. We hang out in it. We yabber about it. We make fun of each other. We, you know, reorient to the ease of being that's presently so, and sip from that fountain. But that's why I do it. I mean, you know, everyone else is.
Yeah, it's enjoyable, I guess. Sick enough to find this enjoyable. I come back a lot. Find it a lot more enjoyable than most other venues. So,
when all of the cosmologies and practices and purifications and rituals, you know, were they to bear fruit? Well, that would be this. No place else. No vows. No special clothing. No accomplishments or certificates of any kind. No spiritual biography, autobiography. Here it is. And it comes with chocolate. So how could it be bad?
Is that dark chocolate?
It is dark chocolate with peanut butter.
Really good. Yeah, I'm ready to eat all the chocolate off the peanut butter and then
eat the peanut
butter.
Sinus pain, but I think if it's dark, I mean, the dark side can be helpful.
You know, it's such a simple task, but it's the hardest thing I have to do.
For the habit of reference, it's excruciating.
Yeah.
Yeah. But for what it already is, you don't lift a finger.
You don't do anything.
Not a thing.
And there's nothing to sell.
Say what you like.
Right.
Don't say anything at all. Yeah. There's no, you know, particular pressure to appear to be spiritual.
Right.
Fuck that. You know, if you don't feel like walking on water today,
persona at all, which is, you know,
don't need one.
Nice enough on its own, spiritual, but just smart. Good. I mean, all of it is like,
You don't have to walk on water. You don't have to heal the sick. You don't have to rise up to heaven.
Really, we don't really care.
You're like, you're cool.
If you groom or not.
Everyone's cool. You don't have to make a big deal about, you know, one's, call it, you know, sinful nature. Like, okay, you know, humans have stress. They do odd things to soothe themselves. Sometimes it looks like genocide. And it does. I like, oof, you know, it can be rough. It can be rough out here on the prairie because we're insane. And you're never going to find a successful or satisfying answer as to why it is or how it is that we're insane. You can borrow from, you know, your own mania and see, well, I'm pretty fucking insane. Just imagine if I ran a country and had an army. Wow, that would, you know, that'd be trouble. what if I had the World Bank, you know, and gold and weapons? Whew, boy, I would wreak some fucking havoc around here.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, why shouldn't the nation state do the same? I'm not justifying anything. It's like, it's gnarly. There's no question that it's gnarly. And one can be, you know, let's just say an activist, if one is bent towards activism in any way you want to be. I mean, white supremacist, anti-LGBTQ Nazis are activists, and they're enthralled and empowered to do what they love to do, which is to disenfranchise anybody of color or anyone that's not heterosexual or whatever, right? And then there are other kinds of activists that do whatever they can from day to day to save bees from pesticides. Then you have, you know, persons of power that usurp the rule of law and the rule of morality or ethicality, and other persons in power that, you know, might be able to take them down. So, you know, trying to figure it out, well, I mean, could be worthwhile if that's what you like to do. You know, if you're a social scientist or a politician or an activist, an orator, if you're, you know, a religious leader or figure, or if you're a television personality, if you're an author, then maybe you contribute, you know, to the dialogue of what the fuck it is that's going on, and, you know, how we might alter our behavior to support sustainability rather than veering towards extinction.
Thank you. I'm thinking of Arjuna.
Yeah.
And his struggle, and Krishna going, hey, you know, do what comes natural. Yeah, but I'm, you know, I'm spiritual. I can't be doing this kind of war stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Do what you need to do.
Hey, maybe joining Pebble Hill, you know, is a way of orienting toward certain kinds of people and certain kinds of programs and certain kinds of tribal warmth that's nourishing. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's what, let's say, people do. And if I can't find constructive nourishment, well, I've got YouTube, marijuana, opioids, and alcohol, and, you know, my recovery pals. And I hear the angels sing when I use my drugs and alcohol and opioids and YouTube and, yeah. I mean, why are you? Why is any... We're so fond of, you know, free will. And when all the evidence, and I mean all the evidence, says you gotta be kidding me, but despite all the evidence, we still insist from day to day, morning till night, immediately upon waking, that I'm in charge, that I have decisions to make, that my happiness depends on me, what I believe and what I choose to believe. And none of that's true at all, ever, and yet, try to convince someone that's convinced otherwise, and you cannot. So this is a little bit, you know, strange. If one is resting in exactly what this is, with nothing to prove, where's your free will? It makes no sense. It doesn't function. The myth of free will, and or the myth, let's say, of predestiny, in order for them to get any legs at all, they have to go back into the reference field back into the orientation field of self to then decide whether I'm either just a pawn of predestiny or I am the, you know, manifest destiny from moment to moment of what I believe and choose to do. Just leave it alone. Put it down. So if there's a strong, you could say, you know, motivation of self-pride, this ease of being is hard to come to. There's a lot to, let's just say, relinquish, though there's nothing to relinquish. There's a lot to see through, though there's nothing to see through. There's a bounty field of unadornment for the asking, which never abates. And yet our crafty capacity for imagination might have us believe otherwise, to the point of, you know, calamitous dissatisfaction. And who's in charge of that? I have never been. I mean, you know, you review the urgencies and the metaphors and the factors that shaped you as a person, and you're like, I didn't do any of that. Pride of ownership is lovely. And, you know, if it's too deep, if pride of ownership is too deep, too prideful, well, it's calamitous, it's afflictive. And no one's in a position to, let's just say, evaluate somebody else's pride of ownership. Right? Yeah. I mean, if there's pride of ownership and one is either enjoying or suffering from it, that's your gig. We're neither justifying anything nor refusing anything. And there's a certain shining, if you will, that, you know, you can feel it, you can hear it, it's palpable, it's somatic. There's a certain kind of shining that this is. And when the mind and the self-identity is relaxed, mm-hmm. and not self-promoting and not enjoying pride of ownership, well, that shining becomes revelatory. And that's what we have here. The revelatory ease of being. And how far do you have to travel? Not too far. What do you have to do? Nothing. It's that easy? Not so easy.
That's right.
Because we're predisposed to searching, uh-huh. and longing.
Yeah. Now,
it sounds easy, but it's not.
Yes. So a conversation like this one, which is, you know, not that frequent, not that rare, if one's consciousness were fixed, then you wouldn't be able to dance around in, let's just say, a broader spectrum, meta appreciation, to look, let's say, back at the nature of your own mind, right? If you were just mind, you'd never be able to look back and see, right, the cyclic nature of how that mind is functioning and how association and imagination will conjure and solicit anxiety, depression, apprehension, fear, overreaction, right? Yeah. So, but you're not those things. You are perhaps nothing at all. Maybe you're just, maybe.
It's kind of scary in a sense.
I've no argument here.
Right.
No argument here. Yes. It is a,
out of it. At least it's doing it to me. Right?
Well, you could say that's a good sign. You're right on cue. Yeah.
When you start to creep yourself
When you start to creep yourself out,
you're
excellent.
Yeah.
Because you see, if I've been only self-aware as a creature of knowledge and opinion and sentiment and body and circumstances and events, I have no idea that I actually might be a disembodied intelligence that's capable of so much less or so much more. Because I've got too much pride of ownership wrapped up in a very local package, right? So this conversation unlocks the key, unlocks the door of, you could say, habituated locality. Now you discover, like, whoa, this is a little, I'm freaking myself out.
Yeah, right.
Because you discover that you are actually capable, with really no effort, I mean, quite naturally, of a recalibration or reevaluation of, call it the psychic geometry of how consciousness actually functions. And you can look back at it and go, boy, is that fucked up. And you're not accustomed, one is not accustomed to looking from that vantage point, back on oneself, free of the implication of locality. And you're like...
And if you strip away all of what we think we are.
Yes.
And associate ourselves with.
Yes.
You're left with nothing.
Well, could be.
You know, not much.
Less and less.
Will you buy that one? Not much.
Yeah, not much. But it's funny, just like everything is such a bizarre paradox, the degree to which you are eviscerated in all of this frivolity and all of this falsehood and discover this nothing. Well, it's not nothing.
No, right.
Yeah.
It's not nothing.
Right.
But you don't know what it is.
I'm with you. Great.
What is that?
Great t-shirt. It's not nothing, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Well, you're enlightened. Tomorrow's, you're going to leave tomorrow's program. I mean, really, if you love someone, you say, it's not nothing, but I don't know what it is.
Right.
And you're in love. Yes. It's not figure outable.
Yeah.
Because any attempt to figure out means you're referring once again to the movement of reference
to
objectify or subjectify this that cannot be objectified or subjectified. Streaming novelty cannot be reduced to reference. The mind that creates misery reduces everything to reference and then suffers from pride of ownership. Oh, fuck.
Reference and objectification, and generally it's on a mission, and it's that's anxiety 101.
Now, who are you, or what is this? If the habit of subjectifying a self, of objectifying objects, of being free from the implication of circumstances and events, of discovering that this isn't nothing, but I don't know what it is, you're freaking yourself out. That's what we do. We freak ourselves out, then have a good chuckle, and then have a snack. That's pretty much it. I mean, if you had to say, what do you guys do? We freak each other out. We laugh about it or cry, whatever needs to happen, and then you have a snack.
Yeah.
What the fuck else is there to do?
Right?
Nothing. I mean, you can go bowling, but it's pretty much the same thing. So what did you guys do with that meeting? Don't ask.
I know, it's so funny. Yeah, what was the...
What'd you talk about?
Can you summarize? I said,
no.
I said, it's...
For 7 years, this meeting has been going on several times a week, you know, with a small undulation.
For 7 years, all three?
No.
Off, me off and on in the beginning, and then more on than off the past few years.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how long I've been coming. It's me like five.
Don't ask
five,
me.
Four or five, maybe. Somewhere between 3 and 9. I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Dave and I knew each other through Pebble Hill and meditation circles on Sunday morning and Tuesday evening. So then I began taking the risk to have this kind of conversation, and you know, Dave was at that first meeting.
Jim Thorson,
Jim Thorson
around that first meeting. in a circle.
And I had, I had no idea what I was going to do. I'm fucking clueless. So yeah, and it had a different, you could say, emphasis or patina then, as you know, all of us, myself of course included, were discovering how this might look, how it might work, how it might feel, how it would be reinforced, how it would unfold and be nourished by simply the willingness to try again. And I can't take any credit for any of that. All I did was show up and, you know, left the rest of it to this that is nothing.
What's interesting is there's not a whole lot of folks that realize that their collection is not as precious as they think it is. And what I mean by that is the teacher that comes and they have all these predispositions to say, if you follow this, you will go from here to here. And Jeff happens to be at that meeting. He might raise his hand. And then all of a sudden you find out if that teacher is really attached to the preciousness of his system of belief and imparting it to others, or if it's really has a richness in presence without such a strong sense of the value of my collection and the value of a self imparting things to those that come, you know.
Buddhism is hell-bent on using the carrot of some ultimate, you know, thing to keep everyone trapped and hypnotized by Buddhism.
Yeah.
So Buddhism is not about this, which is the present freedom of consciousness from any implication. That's what this is. No, Buddhism is all concerned about Buddhism.
I think all of them are like that.
They're all like that.
Yeah.
They all want to enroll, you know, the newcomer into the cosmology, not into the actuality of this that is nothing that I don't know what it is. So, you know, you could say for whatever strange reason, by virtue of my training and suffering and repeat, who knows? We got somehow was able to, let's say, break free to some degree from my own self-entrapping habits and discovered what it might feel like and look like to emphasize the liberation rather than the means to it. Why fuck around with means if it's already exactly what it is?
Right.
And occasionally, like this evening, you know, someone new shows up and doesn't have a problem with that. He's okay. There's a bunch of people that have run out of this room before we even got
one
this
time
far.
We thought the guy might actually even call the cops a little
bit. Yeah, he just got all flustered. The one you're thinking about was the father.
Yeah.
He had a super strong sense of importance around being a father with a child and exploring some of these avenues, going into places that we've been exploring was just not a place he was not even a little bit wanting to go. And he was fighting back, and then he realized, I think I'm in the wrong place. I'm going to go. or something like that.
When I asked what you were exploring, then he felt... Do you remember?
I think it was his strong sense of self as father, and the angst and struggle about being a good or not good father was being challenged. That reference point was being, what would you call it?
My reading of him that evening, if we're speaking about the same event,
yeah,
was a gentleman that was unfortunately starting to flirt with bipolar behavior, and his wife was concerned, and this was perhaps an early stage before he was, let's say, officially diagnosed or may have even sought meaningful medical or therapeutic intervention. So she was, you know, this is from what he was sharing with us, which was, you know, lovely for him to do. He was upset because she was beginning to behave in a protectionist way around the kids. Ooh. Because he was starting to flirt with some really trippy, conspiratorial and other kinds of, you know, stuff, which is wonderfully fun if you're into that. But if you're in a marriage and it's not in control and you're beginning to frighten your spouse and the children, there's obviously going to be some stress. So, you know, it was, let's just say it was appropriate that evening to give him just enough material so that he could leave the room, because this is not for someone in that phase of, you know,
instability
or psychiatric care. Yeah.
That's a shame.
But the world is full of us.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, and even in that case, he knew what he needed. And I call this strong medicine. And this medicine, someone could come here and become very unsettled, as if it's too much medicine, if they're not predisposed and willing to go certain places. Mm-hmm. And you're unapologetic about this is what we do.
The first advice is run.
Run, fuckers.
Run, fuckers, run. Yeah, Forrest, run. Run, fuckers, run is appropriate. That's the first healthy advice. Run.
Run, okay.
Absolutely. If it's not your time to run, if for some reason you're meant to walk in, hang out, and imbibe whatever is here, well, that's on you. Because as you discovered, without, you know, any dues or selling of books or tapes or CDs, this is not nothing, but you don't know what it is. And as you start to encounter that, your, call it consciousness, if there were one, goes out a few electron orbits beyond the perimeters that you or any of us are accustomed to, and that's a bit of a shock. It's a bit of a jolt. To, whoa, touch a, it's hard to call it, a perspective.
Yeah, I noticed that I didn't want to stay there. I quickly got out of there.
Okay.
You know?
Yep.
No, I did.
A little disorienting, I think.
Yeah, I think it was so like, wow.
Yeah.
And what am I? And I went, whoop, right out.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now, so wonderful. I mean, you can see from your own firsthand experience a reflex that's not just peculiar to you, but anyone that shows up here, I mean, I've been around this long enough to know, to read people, not always perfectly accurately, but to be pretty accurate about reading people and, you know, where they are and what their capacity might be to have that encounter and integrate or imbibe or not be completely freaked out by that encounter and find it, let's just say, compelling enough, mirthful enough that you might be willing to, you know, take some baby steps toward that cliff again. Because that's what we're doing. We're walking toward a cliff that won't hurt you. It will annihilate you, but it won't hurt you.
And sometimes, it does. Admittedly, I'll come and I'll stay present. I push back.
Yeah.
I'm not, I don't want to go there. and I push back and then I'm okay. But if I don't honor my humanness, then I'm disoriented because I'm not really in touch. Sometimes pushing back is what I need to do.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But not consistently. People that come in consistently, then it's like, well, why are you here?
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I mean, like in all things, take care of yourself. You know, there's no, you could say, pressure to impose upon, to change your mind about anything at all. If something, I'll call it magical, if not a little bit threatening, shows up, it's completely up to you as to whether that's something you want to, you know, look at again, or, you know, I'll pass. That's right? I mean, call that karma. Call that dharma.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's magic. I don't know what it is.
Somebody hears something they don't want to hear, they'll push back against the person.
Yeah.
And he'll go, hey, I'm not claiming to know anything.
Right.
And they're still pushing back, but they don't know what to push back on because it's not like
you're
saying this is true. It's just exploring a place that's untethered from the usual, usual frame.
I have an entertaining spiritual autobiography, but it means nothing. You know, I'm made more a failure than anything else. So, you know, who am I kidding? This isn't about me. I may be the most, verbal when it comes to, you know, playing around the conversation and responding to things. But it's not about me. Your discovery of whatever that was has nothing to do with me. Consciousness, were there anything, is, let's say, a lot more malleable and creative and mirthful than we let on. And if anxiety or apprehension or, you know, frustration in life motivates us to explore a little further, you might find some gifts that have been sitting there in the perimeter of your own experience that you hadn't noticed. Then if they reveal themselves to you, then you make the call. Will I take advantage of those gifts? Or will I, right?
Mm-hmm.
Will I back off? And any decision you make now could change a nanosecond from now. So there's there's no committing to, you know, who you think you are or what it is you're going to do about anything. This is just revelatory. And being revelatory, it also, you could say, has the capacity to erase, right, the complexity and the conviction of one's pride of ownership.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you get used to it. You're like, wow, pride of ownership. Yeah, boy, I've gotten as much as I can get out of that. I think I'm like, you know, I'm about to try something new. Let's try something new because pride of ownership is not fucking working for me. And I don't need to continue to invest in pride of ownership and pride of ownership. Maybe there's something else out there. Maybe there's another, hint or texture or divination that I might have a relationship with that could be profoundly instructive, completely beyond one's, let's just say, imaginary expectations. And that's the nature of erasure. Here this is. Far out. You got nothing.
Nothing.
You got nothing to quarrel with and nothing to prove and nothing to be afraid of, really. But as you can see,
I can see how learning to peel back the onion, right? Get all.
Yes.
Once I get used to that.
Yes.
All these things that happen to me in my mind.
Right.
Throughout my day,
yeah,
I think I would have more control over saying, clearing it.
Yes, and it's better than all that. Really, it is.
I don't know if I can stay in that.
Well,
are you able to stay there?
There is no such thing.
Okay, because I.
You see, right, so here's, let me help dismantle some of this, right? First of all, you're relying upon, you know, the logistics of how you feel about things, whether emotionally, psychiatrically, or sensually. And you, like any of us, have found a fair share of displeasure with a mind that creates afflictive scenarios. So, you're still the meat, and the meat's like not quite happy. So the meat wants to find a switch or a means of relief from afflictive experience and then so-called remain, right? Mm-hmm. Understood. I get it. Now, if you look a little more carefully at that expectation or hope or frustration, you'll see that it's all oriented around reference of self, dependent upon prior sensuality that was displeasurable. and then what to do about yourself in the future, right?
Right.
Because you want to suffer less in your future.
Right.
But as soon as you pick up the baton of suffering less in your future, you're suffering now. Because you're instantaneously reoriented as the meat that has a recollection of having suffered prior to now.
Right.
That's projecting herself again as a sensual being and wanting to suffer less in your imaginary future. But by doing so, look what you've done.
Yeah, I'm doing it again.
Okay. You're not alone.
I'm doing it again.
You're not alone.
This is it.
That's what we do. You see the intimacy.
That's
all. Yeah, baby. That's right.
That's it.
So you see the intimacy is being undefended, a gift that you have by whatever means. You can say, whoa, look at all the curious, mirthful, but perhaps from time to time unpleasurable or displeasurable ways, I reinforce the imagination of afflictive prior experience being something I want to avoid in my imaginary future.
Right.
And by doing that in the so-called present, you're miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah. See how easy it is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, once again, I didn't answer the question about who designed it this way.
Right, now that's
because
fine.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know.
So I didn't want to, volunteer. Well, because of, Prakriti and Parousha Hushamalaga and Stegosauruses. Come on. This is a generous, overly generous field of instantaneous vibratory reflection and self-fulfillingness. If you touch this, even just a little touch, it gives you a buffet that you could never afford. That's how quick, that's how generous it is. It's instantaneous. Even before you finished thinking what you thought you might be thinking or have anticipated thinking about, buffet. It's that quick. It's faster than you are. Before you're even done reflecting upon what it is you think you're reflecting upon, buffet.
Right.
So it's faster than you. That's how good it is. That's what you're up against. Now, is that, you could just say, weird demonstrative capacity of reality out to harm you? No. It's just like, my nature is generosity. You give me the slightest little, hint, and I will give you worlds and realms, zones and parallel universes beyond measure just to please you. Think of it as just pure generosity, unbridled, naive generosity beyond comprehension. We call it suffering, but it doesn't. You see?
Yeah.
So it's just like, what do you want? I'm yours. Give me any piece of information. I'll give you universes. So it's thinking, I love you. I'm giving you everything. And you're like, I'm really upset.
Yours.
Right? Yeah, I'm crazy. I'm crazy with the dissatisfaction of myself. Would you please stand the fuck down? And it's like, try to get a puppy to chill the fuck out. It won't. It can't. That's what we're up against. Reality is a puppy that never matures, that eats the furniture and slobbers everything and poops and urinates all over the house, and there's never enough time to clean it up. That's what reality is, and we're sitting around going, I'm so fucked. When all really this is you playing with the puppy.
Yeah.
That's all. It's just a puppy. It's wild. It's crazed. It's generous beyond imagination. As you see that, and as the habit of locality starts to relax, you're like, oh, it's just a puppy. I'm not suffering from the implication of locality. Because it's just a puppy. It doesn't know. It doesn't have...
it's not biased.
It has no bias. It has no agenda to harm. It's just, it's generosity itself. The yogi, the metaphor across any religion, any Gnostic endeavor, the yogi, right? I mean, you don't necessarily have to sit all rigid and still. I mean, the Buddha looked like he was sitting all rigid and still, and Shiva looks like he's sitting all rigid and still or dancing, and there's all that, you know, rigidity stuff. But metaphorically, not necessarily somatically, metaphorically, you're like, I'm not going to touch this. You don't touch it. You don't. You learn how. That you don't have to make a big effort not to touch it. It's not as difficult as it first appears to be. The reason it appears to be difficult is because the orientation is to the meat that had a less than optimal past that wants to resist or refuse the imagination of future suffering. So from that point of view, it's not difficult. It's impossible because you're up against a puppy. And the puppy is inexhaustible. You're not going to win. You cannot win. So instead of playing that game of trying to outwit an inexhaustible puppy that has at its disposal reality, you're like, oh, fuck me. I surrender. People that really get good at this, they worship the great puppy.
Really?
I'm keep teasing. It can look like Kali in one culture. It can look like Jesus in another culture. It can look like, you know, Kuan Yin in another culture.
Right.
I'm saying it's all the great puppy. You were like, I pay homage to the great puppy. That's it. You don't have to have any other, you know, big hats and hierarchical institutions that are misogynistic and paternalistic. No, no, no. It's just, I pray to the great puppy because I'm fucked. And that's it. It's that simple. So the yogi learns. And this is an experiential educational endeavor. It's a salon where all you have to do is just loiter around and, you know, everyone can just fuck off. Yeah. It's that simple. But in its simplicity, it brings you, it reveals to you the nature of what this is. Not my nature, not anyone's that what this is. And you're like, oh, so you mean if I just don't touch it, what happens? Nothing.
Thinking of the contrast to that, the intenders group.
Oh, God, the intenders.
The intenders get together and they share intentions once a week. I intend this, I intend that. And I remember Jeff showed up once or twice, and he said, I have no intentions, but I'm grateful to be here. You know, and it's like not touching the puppy.
Don't touch the puppy.
Yet life really still goes on. I get tired of hearing myself.
What did the intentioners think of that? Because they're coming with intentions.
I think they just said, well, it's Jeff, you know, that's what Jeff.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Uh-huh.
You know, I got tired of it after a while because things started to just fill up. It was like a garden that had no room for anything. It started super simple, and then all of a sudden, then you read a long list of prayers,
healings,
and then a long list of pre-gratitudes and intentions, an invocation, a spiritual prayer,
became liturgy.
After the, and all of a sudden, it's a whole big mass of things, and it's like, you know, I think I want to dedicate my Wednesdays to actually doing something.
Like playing chess.
Yeah. Or something, yeah. Because it's just so interesting because it's a never ending. It's like being on the gerbil wheel.
Yeah.
You know, I know I'm getting somewhere. I am, aren't I? I'm moving.
So the liturgical predilection that we have, as was evidenced by a group that started simple and then became egomaniacally super saturated with ritual. So one's mind is doing the same thing.
Right,
you see how quickly and easily the orientation is to meet, self, memory, sensuality, regret, sorrow, depression, and now there's all this reaction. And the reaction is, you know, trying to figure out how to ameliorate future suffering. But you can see what's happened is,
yeah,
right? You're toast. You're back in fantasy. you're sipping again from, you know, etheric implication. So we simply, let's say, just call BS, you know, when that happens, not to insult or intimidate anyone, right. Just to like, ha ha ha, ha ha ha, ha ha ha. And you, let's just say, get better at, this is not about, you know, being behaviorally, right, adroit. Because again, that's the meat trying to figure out how to survive, you know, gracefully in a community of weirdos. Like, no, not necessary. Don't get good at this. Last thing, don't get good at this. This isn't anything. Getting good at it is, again, that's a behavioral strategy, right? Not necessary. Here it is. It's empty as can be. It's generous as can be. If you touch it, it will give you a buffet. Not touching it is a subtle relationship. It's not a vow, right?
Right.
It's not a commitment of any kind. It's not even vigilance, really. It's just absolute ease.
And there's another angle that I see myself doing.
Yes.
I can't help it sometimes, like all of us, we touch it. And then the drama unfolds, and a certain amount of suffering unfolds with it. And then there's something that can look at it and smile, or that something that's not oriented towards the thing that keeps happening now and then. And that doesn't need me to touch or not touch it, but it allows me to see that this is what happens. You know, like a trampoline, or a pebble, you impress yourself upon it, and it reflects back whatever it is that you want to impress upon it. Like life sucks, or life is grand, and you know, or wouldn't it be nice if, or that, or the other thing, to seeing how I don't have to be compelled to keep doing that. That to me is, I don't know. Again, the self just reappeared, and it's improving now.
Oh yeah,
you see how quickly, and I noticed that in this kind of dynamic. It's like the mind now, the clever mind is now looking at ways of orienting to that which needs no orientation.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's kind of fun to dance with it. Like,
that's why the puppy thing is good, because it's like if you are, like, you take your behavior, oh, I'm just like a puppy, it instantly is like cleaned. You're not like trying to, for the most part, make a puppy, like, you're just like, oh, it's a puppy, it's crazy, it sometimes it barks at things, like if a deer goes by, I mean, it can be aggressive and it can be playful and it can throw up all over everything and poop. It's just like,
sounds like me.
Yeah, it's like, what, okay, so then you can move on.
That's right.
You don't have to, you know, spend as much in the realm of trying to fix or whatever. You're just like, okay, puppy, moving on. What else is here? not in that realm.
The habit to process whatever experience might be, which instantly conjures oneself in a referential relationship. A referential relationship is secondhand. It's unsatisfactory. As the habit to venture once again into referential relationship relaxes, and you're just here, not special, nothing to process, that elicits, you could say, an unearned joy. One is nourished by being itself, not by anything that occurs or doesn't occur. And no calories are wasted in micromanaging fantasy.
Well, I think it's interesting that we have, I don't know of any place that I can go.
Yes.
That I can have individuals like yourselves just being. I really can't think of one place.
Very popular. That's why this group's small too. Usually pretty small.
You know, it's very interesting. And yeah.
Uh-huh. we are all drunk with cosmology and authority. This is something else.
I remember Ernest coming here and saying that and being somewhat enamored by it, the oddity of it, and then repulsed.
Was that the one that stormed out?
No. Ernest is a dear friend of mine. He shifts into political mode, and then it has a lot of drive.
He got thrown out.
A lot of drive.
He was thrown out.
Sometimes we broke.
He was thrown out.
That's not what we're about. And he's like, well, wait a minute. That's where I am right now. It's interesting because at an earlier stage, it's like, wow, I can't imagine or have ever been a place like you just described. Yeah. There's been a few folks.
Very interesting.
That
it's very comforting, I think.
It grows on you. Yeah. Being relieved of self-reference is awesome.
It's different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very different.
And it's not philosophical. It's palpable.
You know, I'm very political as well, but I know that this is not the setting. But I'm probably like Ernest in another setting.
Except no, you're actually much more attuned to, well, oh, so this is what we do here.
Right.
As opposed to someone coming, there was also another associate. He couldn't help having this his agenda. He wanted to tell stories and reference. And he just wouldn't let up. So it ended up becoming almost an aggression. To have that energy, though he was calm, he was just not at all sensing that that's not what it's about.
Right.
So what we do. It's not a stage for you, sorry.
Not about you, Ernest.
Or this other fellow. I don't want to give him a name.
Yeah.
He's a friend, but
this is the Gnostic alchemy. From time to time in the meetup page, you know, it says, what do you do? Conversational Gnostic alchemy. That's what it is. Just, tribal members under the stars, hanging out by the fire, being nobody special. Yeah.
I just got this cool image of open hands holding this ball of light, and as soon as it's enamored by it, like, oh, isn't that cool? Just like,
yeah.
Where'd it go? But then as soon as you relax and let go, it starts to get bright.
Yeah, it's a demonstrative radiant field, and our tendency is to clasp or grasp or reject. And once again, if anything arises in us as an impulse that responds to this radiant field, then it becomes something else, even faster than that. So it's quite a trick without being rigid in one's consciousness. Sometimes, you know, Vipassana retreats and other tools, they rely on, I would say, superficial rigidity. You don't need to practice superficial rigidity in the midst of a radiant field, a generous radiant field. There's no rigidity. You know, fall asleep. Fall over, go for a walk, have a piece of chocolate. There's no point in, 40 minutes on walking meditation, 40 minutes sitting meditation, 40 minutes walking, 40 minutes sitting, instruction, chanting until 9:30 at night, as a superficial form of sensory deprivation and imposed rigidity, imposed ritual. That can be useful. I mean, if someone is really crazed, building up a certain kind of contemplative chops has its use. But this doesn't require it. It's like, I'm no good. I'm okay with that. I'm less than no good, and I'm okay with that. I can't prove anything to anybody, and I'm okay with that. Nobody likes me. And I'm okay with that.
I'm a bad, bad puppy.
It's just permission. It's just radiant inclusion. Oh, you mean this is radiant inclusion? That's right.
Yeah, I like that, right? Radiant inclusion. Very nice. Very nice.
Sometimes, like any chimpanzee, I pull a good one out of the pot.
You did good. You did good.
Everyone likes that radiant thing.
Yeah, I know. Plagiarized. Everything's plagiarized. And it's not that. You see,
Nothing is owned, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you
copyright.
Let's say you hear a thing or you read a thing, and it right, and it tickles you a certain way, and you're like, really, it's not the words, it's the feeling that occurs in you that you like, right? Mm-hmm. That you respond to. So it's that's it. The reality is what you're responding to, not the so-called memes that appear to trigger it. I mean, you could say radiant inclusivity. All on your ride home, and it will not necessarily trigger the same spontaneous moment that
no, I just
it
think the
did.
Word choice encapsulates a lot of.
Yeah.
I think the word choice is what I really like.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Coca-Cola is good too.
But what? I'm not sure.
Removing rust, I think.
I was just going to say.
Yeah, that's right. Getting the paint off your car.
That's it.
Good.
Yeah.
In a pinch, you know.
Yeah, in a pinch. Well, that's that. That's what we do. You got the whole thing. We didn't withhold anything.
Yeah. This was really, really on, you might say.
Hey, since I was a preteen, I like getting high. I still like getting high. I just figured out some creative ways to do it.
Uh-huh.
Fewer side effects.
I remember as a teen, I would get high, and then I got a paranoid high.
Oh, yeah, I like those too.
No. No. That was it for me.
Yeah, that was it, right? You couldn't barrel through the paranoia, could you?
No. That's it. I will never do that again, and I never did it again.
All right. Well.
Although I was in a car with a whole bunch of, you know, smoking and inhaling.
Paranoid stoners?
Once you have a paranoid, you go right into paranoid. At least I did.
Yeah. You need a friend. Yeah. If you're going to go paranoid, it's good to have a friend. Is it as bad as we think? It's worse.
Oh, my God. It's horrible.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
That's true.